All right, as we come together today, we are continuing in the book of Daniel. Now, we went last week through Daniel chapter 7, and we made a valiant effort to start on chapter 9, and as many of my valiant efforts do, it didn't go very far, which is all right. Because as we get into Daniel chapter 9, most of our effort and attention is really focused on verses 24 to 27 as it gets into the 77s, the 70 weeks. It's one of the key prophetic passages, but we can't ignore the first portion of that chapter. We can't forget the context that it was given in, and really the first block of that chapter, the huge majority of that chapter, is Daniel's prayer and petition on behalf of his people. Why is Daniel praying? Let's review up that way. Why is Daniel interceding on behalf of his people before the Lord? What's going on? Good. All right. So Daniel is looking in Jeremiah's prophecy, and now he has seen that the time that God appointed for the exile is over. Daniel recognizes that what Jeremiah wrote about the length of the exile, oddly enough, as Daniel looks at Jeremiah's prophecy, he takes it very literally. God said, "You will be gone for this amount of time. That amount of time is up. God must be ready to do something else here." And so he intercedes, and when he prays on behalf of his people. He recognizes their sin. He never blames God for sending them away. He recognizes that it was their great sin that caused God to act in faithfulness, in absolute faithfulness to what he said. You said you would do this, we did this, and you did exactly what you said you would do. And now, O Lord, restore us, essentially. And restore us not for our sake, not because we've got it all together now. This is not a national prayer. Daniel is not gathered together with the exiles in Babylon. This is a very personal and private reflection that he has. But he prays on behalf of his people, and he prays for the sake of God that he would restore his people, that for his name's sake, that because of his faithfulness, because of his mercy, because of his love, because of his covenant promises, because of his nature, he would return the people as he said he would. And Daniel receives an answer, and that answer is brought by Gabriel, an angel, and he's come forth to give him an understanding of what will happen. And the answer to that is 70 weeks, or 77s literally, as it starts in verse 24. Now we said something about those sevens. They are most likely years. Why are they most likely years? Well, first of all, that is by far the most common interpretation, even if you take them as being something other than literal years or when you think those happened. The most common interpretation is that they're years. It makes sense. Nebuchadnezzar had already been, in Daniel chapter 4, stricken with the mind of a beast, essentially, for a period of 7 years. So it's been used the same way in the book. Daniel, if you look at the context, he's been praying, and as he recognizes, he sees that it's been 70 years since they've gone into captivity, and now what he receives as an answer is not that the 70 years are up and that there is no further timeline. Now the answer that God gives him is, you've been in captivity for 70 years, but now I have 70 sevens decreed or set aside for your people. Now, and again, that's what we went over last week, is as we're looking at the introduction to this, these 77s, this group of 490, is an interval given for a specific people, and it's set aside to accomplish specific purposes. What people does this deal with, and how do we know? 70 weeks has been decreed for who?
Israel.
Israel. How do you know, Marcy?
I don't know.
That's what's in my notes. Well, what does it say in Daniel chapter, or in verse 24 there? 70 weeks have been decreed for who? Your people. Who is he talking to specifically? Who is Gabriel talking to? Daniel. So your is Daniel. 70 weeks have been decreed for your, Daniel, your people. Who are Daniel's people? It's Israel. Why do you know that? Because verses 1 through 23, Daniel has been interceding for a specific group of people. Israel. And not because they are all believing Israel. He has appealed to them as a nation with a national heritage that stands in covenant relationship to Yahweh. So he says, 70 weeks have been decreed for your people. And for what? Your holy city. What holy city is that? Jerusalem. And if you read the first portion of the book, you will see that Jerusalem figure, or the first portion of that chapter, Jerusalem figures into there as well. This is not just a random people. This is not just an eclectic group of people. These 77s, this period that is decreed and set aside, God's timetable here, is with reference to a specific group of people in a specific city. And it is set aside for specific purposes. We find those purposes starting in the second half of verse 24 there. To finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. Finish transgression, make an end of sin, make atonement, these things that deal with sin and the culmination and the fulfillment of sin, the idea of sin being filled up, transgression being filled up, and then sin brought to an end, making an atonement, a covering, a restoration for sin, to bring in righteousness, to restore, not only to put an end to sin, but to bring in righteousness, holiness, to seal up vision and prophecy, to bring a culmination or an end point to vision and prophecy, and then something that might be a little bit random because those are very, very spiritual realities, to anoint the most holy place. Well, is the city tied to the most holy place? Yes, it is. There was only one city with the most holy place, and it would be your holy city. So again, contextually, we're talking about Jerusalem, and it appears to be referring to something of a temple. Now, let's take a little bit more time today and look at those 77s and see what we can get through. Verse 25. So you are to know and discern. All right, so let's stop right there. We're never going to make it through if I keep going at this pace. Is this designed to remain a mystery to Daniel? No. This is given so that he might know and discern, or know and understand something. In other words, this is not some grand mystery that Daniel has no means of apprehending. Are there things that Daniel will not fully understand? Yes. When we get to chapter 12, Daniel asks a question at the end. He's given an answer, and then he said, you're not going to get it right now. Seal it up. It's for the last days. You just write down what we told you. We'll get there. But for this, he's supposed to see, know, and understand what is happening. You're to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Quite a mouthful there. What starts this 70 group of sevens? What's the event that starts this timetable, if you will? Say it louder. You can read it. You're fine. You're absolutely right. Just say it louder, confidently.
The decree to restore
and rebuild Jerusalem. This is distinct from a decree to return to Jerusalem. As you read through the historical books, you see that under Cyrus, an issue was decreed that they could return to Jerusalem. And when they returned, they were given permission to rebuild the temple, to settle there. But there's a further decree that takes place years and years later, where Jerusalem is actually commanded to be rebuilt with things like its fortifications, its defenses against their neighbors around it. So again, people start this kind of time clock in different places. My understanding, and again, I'm not going to die on this, is that it's not started at the decree of Cyrus to rebuild the temple. This happens decades later under a ruler called Artaxerxes, who decrees that Jerusalem ought not only to be rebuilt, not only that it is permissible for them to return, but that Jerusalem should be restored and rebuilt, including its temple, its moat, its fortifications, its defenses. It should be a self-sustaining, self-defending place. Now, from the time that that decree happens until Messiah the Prince, there will be 77 weeks and 62 weeks. What's 7 plus 62? 69, good. All right. Again, I got to do a little bit of basic math to wake you up. But it's interesting that Daniel does not say that there will be a group of 69 weeks. There is something distinct in here. There are 7 weeks and 62 weeks. And again, what happens there? Well, as it turns out, the people go and they rebuild, but that takes a significant amount of time, roughly 50 years. Again, there's timelines that we don't have the time today to get into. But what happens at the conclusion of the 62 weeks? So there's 7 weeks, and in that 7 weeks, it will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. And you read through when it was rebuilt in the historical books, and you see the distress, the opposition from neighboring nations and peoples, and the fear that the people had as it was rebuilt. But it is rebuilt. And then after 7 and 62 weeks, after those 62 weeks, verse 26, after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. Anybody know what 69 times 7 is? Just under 490, roughly 7 less than 490, 483. From that decree from Artaxerxes to rebuild Jerusalem 483 years later, according to, again, several timelines where guys put in lots and lots of years of study, you wind up with the Passion Week to the day, according to some people, from when that decree was given to when Christ is crucified. Why do I understand these as literal years? Because it makes very good sense historically that from a decree to rebuild Jerusalem to the death of Jesus Christ was 483 years. And so it's 69 sevens that have taken place. Now we're given something very interesting here, because what happens to Messiah at the end of those 69 weeks? He is cut off. Messiah being cut off? Messiah is the one who comes to rule, isn't he? He's the one who comes to reign. This is a very, very significant thing that Daniel introduces, that Messiah is not only the suffering servant as he's portrayed in Isaiah, but that he is cut off, that he has nothing. Again, we have the benefit of hindsight and history, looking back and seeing that he's killed. But to hear that Messiah is going to be cut off would be something striking. But now after that 62 and 6 and 7, after that 69 have ended, Messiah is cut off. And it stops for a time. And something else happens. The Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. And the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary. The people of the prince to come. The prince to come is a character who is not there at this time. Does that make sense? He is the prince who is to come. He looks future at this time. But the people of that same prince, the one who will come in the future, are going to do something. They are going to what? Destroy the city and the sanctuary. What city and what sanctuary? Jerusalem. Again, keeping it in context, this is not a figurative, mysterious thing. There's been one city and one sanctuary in Daniel's whole flow of thought here. The people of the prince to come are going to destroy Jerusalem and the sanctuary. In 70 AD, after Messiah was cut off, not before, not during, but after he was cut off, 70 AD, Titus and the legions from Rome came in and destroyed the temple. They sieged Jerusalem. Now, look at what's written there. Because the next thing that's mentioned is not another week, is it? There seems to be an interlude there. And its end will come with a flood. Even to the end, there will be war and desolations are determined. Well, when's the end? What end? Because it doesn't seem like we've been given another week, another time period. Well, the answer is we don't know. Because for the purposes of this designated people, 69 sevens have passed, and now linguistically, grammatically, structurally, there seems to be a gap there that does not particularly focus on your people, Daniel. That doesn't mean that it's just willy-nilly that God's timetable is thrown off. Although the sanctuary and the city are destroyed, these desolations, these destructions will come to the end. There's going to be war, but it's all still determined. That sound familiar when we went through Mark? Jesus talking about even to the end there will be war and rumors of war. Remember him talking about that? How there's a time period characterized by struggle and strife, but that is not the end, he said. It's actually very, very parallel to what Daniel is presenting here. But God's time clock is not done yet. And to its end, there will come with a flood. Even to the end, there will be war, and desolations are determined. Now look at verse 27, because something significant happens. And he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. Oh, we have 1 week left. We've had 69, Messiah is cut off. We have this interval where the temple and the city are destroyed, wars, destructions continuing. But now he comes in and makes a covenant with the many for the final week. We're still looking for 1:7. He makes a covenant with them for the final 7. Who is the he? See, now we have some difference of what we're going to say. Is it Messiah? Is it the prince? If you go back grammatically to the antecedent, the next one back, individual that's spoken of, it is the prince who is to come. You find that in verse 26. Messiah is cut off and has nothing but the people of the prince who is to come. That is the last singular masculine antecedent in this context. And he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he'll put a stop to sacrifice. The one who is coming is the prince to come. At some point, he's no longer going to be the prince to come. He's going to be the prince who is. Does that make sense? And he is going to make a firm covenant for the final 7. But halfway through, something is going to happen. In the middle of the week, he's going to put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. What is the middle of a 7? How much is half of a 7? 3.5. Where have we heard that time period before? Daniel chapter 7. Times, and half a time. Remember that? The little horn. He's going to make a firm covenant with the many. Who's the many? There's certainly some ambiguity here, but Daniel understood it. Who would Daniel understand as the ones that were made a covenant with? Who participates in sacrifice, grain offering? Who has a holy city? It's Israel. This prince who is to come is going to make a firm covenant with Israel that somehow reestablishes or allows them to begin to worship through the sacrificial system again. The temple was destroyed, but now in this last 7, something has to happen where sacrifice is reinstituted. By the way, I think that means a rebuilt temple. But it's a covenant with a fixed time period, but he doesn't keep it. In the middle, he puts a stop to that sacrifice and grain offering. And that's 3.5. In chapter 7:25, he, that's the little horn, the ruler who is to come, will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One. He'll intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they'll be given into his hand for time, times, and half a time. So in the middle of this last 7, there's a treaty that's enforced for the first portion, but for the last portion, the treaty is broken, and he appears to be at war with the many, God's people, Israel. All right. Now this, we'll keep following here. Look at verse 27 about halfway through. He'll put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering, and on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. That's a lot of desolation and a lot of abomination. He makes a covenant, he breaks the covenant, he puts a stop to sacrifice and offering. And then on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate. This one who breaks the covenant makes desolate. He brings desolation and destruction, struggle, strife, wears down people, if we go back to the language of chapter 7. But this only happens for a set period of time. He's the prince who will come, but he's the prince whose days are numbered. Because this desolation only happens how long? Until. Until what? Until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on this one who makes desolate. In other words, this one who brings desolation and abomination is himself brought to desolation and ruin. Where have we seen that before? Daniel chapter 7. These things, there's a reason that these things are all in here and that they're compiled the way that they are. Daniel chapter 7, verse 11. I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words that the little horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. It's a boastful, arrogant little horn that wages war against the saints, but it is eventually destroyed. 7:26, this is what Daniel's interpretation was given. But the court will sit for judgment. His dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. This one who will come will cause significant trouble, but it is for a decreed, set, appointed period of time. What's the ultimate point behind these 77s given in Daniel chapter 9? It's not so you can argue your eschatology. It's another firm proof that God's timetable does not get altered by human history, earthly power, or human rebellion. None of that, even the most prominent, boastful little horn that stands as the abomination of desolation, that stands as the one who ultimately opposes God himself, although he would intend to make changes in laws and times, although he would intend to wear down the saints, to bring them to a period of destruction, none of that is able to overrule God's sovereign timetable and decree in this. And if we're going to finish Daniel, we got to go to chapter 12 today. Daniel chapter 11, which we're not going to go through verse by verse, describes events that are come about in the future yet to Daniel. We're going to move through those and go to chapter 12 because that kind of culminates it. And really, we're going to focus on the first three verses of chapter 12 because we're going to hit the themes of it again and again as we go through the minor or the shorter prophets. Chapter 11 describes a period of great difficulty, a ruler to come who is defeated, a time of struggle and strife. But as we close out the book of Daniel, let's go to Daniel 12, look at verse 1. Now at that time, at what time? Well, the closing of chapter 11, it's a time of distress and struggle, war and conflict. And at that time, it says, Michael will arise. Who is Michael? Well, Michael is described in chapter 10 that we didn't go into as one who's fighting against the prince of Persia. He's presented alongside Gabriel and others in the book as one of these majestic angelic beings. Michael is an angel. If we were to go to Jude, he's described as an archangel. He's an angel, though, with some specific charge or care given to your people. Look at that. Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people. Who are your people? Israel. Michael is somehow uniquely tasked with overseeing or guarding Israel. At that time, he will arise. And what characterizes that time? A time when Daniel chapter 11 talks about as the end, the last times. This is what occurs there. There will be a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. There's going to be a time of struggle, war, persecution, tribulation that is absolutely unique to that point in human history. Unprecedented trouble. Now let's think through that for a moment. Have they seen difficulty as a nation before? Yeah, what are some times when Israel has seen some struggle and conflict? Egypt. Absolutely. The birth of their nation comes out of slavery and struggle, plague and darkness, death in Egypt. God births them in the midst of strife, or so it would seem. Good. When else have they seen trouble? What was that?
Babylon.
They are currently going through a time of trouble when they are not even really a nation. They are a conquered people, dispersed. You have Esther, you have famines, you have plagues, you have a time when they were seeking to be wiped out even when they were in the midst of that exile and God sovereignly protects them. You have times when they're a nation, when the nations surrounding them seem to be overwhelming in their force and their opposition against them. You have 10 tribes essentially deserting and the nation divided, being carried away by Assyria and then by Babylon. They are a people who have known constant trouble. Since the death of Christ, they've still been a people who have known constant trouble, aren't they? You got to bring that into effect. I mean, you have things like the Inquisition in the 12 and 1300s, hundreds of thousands of Jews killed in the name of Christianity, which is a travesty that we can get into at some other class, but killed for their Jewishness. You have persecutions from country to country. You have the 30s and 40s where genocide again was the chosen solution to rid the world of God's chosen people. And this will be a time that is worse still. Daniel looks forward to a time of tribulation unlike anything that will happen. So what is one thing that will mark the end of the end? A tribulation unlike anything, trouble unlike anything that they've seen before. Have we seen that, by the way, already? Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, they wrote the same way, that trouble marks the end. That as we talk about the day of the Lord, one of the things that that means is that a significant amount of struggle and turmoil for Israel. You say the day of the Lord like it's a good thing, but it's not going to mean good for you. It's going to mean destruction for many of you. So there's going to be a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. What else? At that time, your people, who has your people been consistently through the book? Israel. Everyone who is found written in the book. Oh, so Daniel narrows it. Not just your people, but specifically every one of your people who is written in the book will be rescued. So Israel will experience great trouble and tribulation, but Israel will also experience rescue and restoration. Have we seen that theme before? Yes, it has been the consistent theme of the prophets to this point. Has any prophet said that all of Israel will make it through unscathed? No. Judgment falls on God's people. And the ones that are repentant, the ones that are contrite and brokenhearted about their sin, are restored. Remember, we talked about that there's that physical restoration, but that it's accompanied by a spiritual restoration. But we've also seen that God's judgment falls on his chosen people first. The book will be rescued. So you have stress, but you have rescue, and again, something that we've seen consistently through the prophets. Third, what else do we have? And many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake. These to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. Daniel gives us one of the clearest Old Testament pictures of resurrection. What else will accompany this end? Resurrection. Outgoing from the dead, and not only resurrection to life, but resurrection to judgment, where some will be judged and rendered as worthy, and some will be judged and rendered as wicked, corrupt, and eternally shamed and contempt. And held in contempt. There's a resurrection coming. And it coincides in that time of trouble and deliverance. Now, again, this is not a complete picture, but it is another detail, another step in what we have as it relates to our understanding. You go through the rest of this as Daniel in verse 5 looks, there's two others standing, one on the bank of the river and one on the other bank. And he says, how long will it be until the end of these wonders? How long does this period of trouble last that is culminated by rescue and resurrection? How long does that last? Verse 7, I heard the man dressed in linen who was above the waters of the river, and he raised his right hand and his left toward heaven, and he swore by him who lives forever that it would be for a time, times, and half a time. Where have we heard that before? Daniel chapter 7. And we see these things beginning to connect, that this little horn who is to come, that wages war against these saints, that seeks to wear down God's people for a time, times, and half a time, happens during the last seven of God's timetable here. And that's accompanied not only as the greatest time, but it will be culminated by a rescue and include a resurrection there. As for me, I heard, but I could not understand, verse 8. So I said, my Lord, what will be the outcome of these events? Daniel sees all of this at the end. And Daniel has just been given a picture of terrible times of distress, of a rescue for those who are written in the book, of a time of resurrection where people are brought forth from the dead to judgment, some to everlasting life and some to destruction. And as Daniel looks at all of this, he does not fully understand. So he says, what's the outcome of these events? And look at the answer. Go your way, Daniel. Never. You got what you need. Write it down and carry on. These words are concealed and sealed up until the end of time. Many will be purged, purified, and refined. But the wicked will act wickedly, and none of the wicked will understand, but those who have insight will understand. From the time that the regular sacrifice is abolished, have we heard that before, that sacrifice is abolished? Daniel chapter 9, right? From the time that the regular sacrifice is abolished and the abomination of desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days, which is 3.5 years plus 30 days. How blessed is he who keeps waiting and attains to the 1,335 days. Well, that's a brand new figure, isn't it? That's 75 days beyond the times, time, and half a time. So we get a long explanation? No. What do we get? Verse 13, as for you, go your way to the end. And then you will enter into the rest and rise again for your allotted portion at the end of the age. Daniel, you are going to die. And you know when this is all going to make perfect sense to you? At that resurrection. Oh, man. That would be humbling and frustrating and comforting. And we're left with that. Why the different 30 days to the 1,290? Why the 1,335 days? Do I have guesses? Are there people that have all kinds of theories? Absolutely. Do any of those have bearing upon your eternal well-being? No, they don't. Even Daniel wasn't given a specific understanding of what those are. I think there are good explanations if you want to go through those. We can spend time that we do not have allotted in this class for those. I will refer you to books and papers that you will read and come back and say, I still don't understand. That's okay. But it is interesting to see that times, time, and half a time in the same context is now connected to days, literal days. That as we've talked through periods of sevens, they've been attached to physical numbers, years, times, historical evidences where these things line up and make sense. So what have we seen from Daniel? What was the summary of Daniel? What have we seen of the kingdom program? Well, we've seen that there's going to be a progression in Gentile kingdoms, and that it's not random, and that it's not haphazard, but that it's appointed by God. That God knows exactly what is coming and exactly how long it is going to be in power for. And we've seen that the messianic kingdom, the God's kingdom, the kingdom comes at a particular point in human history during some powerful fourth kingdom. A time when there were 10 kings, a time when there was a little horn who has pulled up three of those kings and now is boastful and arrogant. We've seen that this king will have a specific hatred for the people of God and that he is going to seek to destroy them. He will wear them down. He will appear to have victory, but it's only for a set period of time, 3.5 years. We've learned that there's times appointed for Israel, 77s, and the first 69 finish or culminate with the cutting off of Messiah. We learn that Messiah is going to be cut off. We learn that this clock starts again, that these decreed periods for God's people Israel pick up with the signing or the oncoming of a covenant, a treaty that's meant to last for a period of 7 years, but that halfway through is broken. We're reminded again, something that we've seen before, that the end comes with a time of unparalleled distress that's marked out with deliverance at the end of that. And now we see that accompanying that time will be a resurrection. That judgment will come, and some will move toward everlasting life, and some will be judged and rejected. And ultimately, we close with the thought that Daniel, one of the very few characters in the Bible who we don't get negatives on, the Bible is very, very good about not presenting untouchable, unassailable heroes. The men in the Bible are very much men. There's not much negative about Daniel. Yet even a man that faithful with that length of ministry at the end of his days was given, this is what is going to happen, and you will not comprehend this. Write it down, seal it up, trust that it's true, and you'll know when you're resurrected. It's a good thought to end on, lest we become too full of our own understanding, our own arrogant thoughts, whether it relates to eschatology or anything else. that we've been given what we've been given. The secret things belong to the Lord, Deuteronomy 29, 29. The secret things belong to the Lord. But 2 Peter says we've been given everything we need for life and godliness. We have absolutely everything we need to be restored to God through the work of Jesus Christ and then to live lives of humble holiness in response to that gospel. All right, we are done for today. I'm going to turn off my mic.